Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 78, Bygones. I am your intro person, May, and I am here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
Once again, we recap DCTV in a flash. You can contact us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. You can listen to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and on Spotify. And we're also still on Facebook, which we have consistently been contributing to. And we have Patreon. So if you would like us...
I love how we shade Facebook every week. We're still there. Yeah.
It's like we shade ourselves.
Yeah.
Via Facebook.
Our kind reminder to ourselves. We also have a Patreon. So if you'd like to contribute some money to us to keep this podcast going, that would be greatly appreciated. It is at patreon.com/DCTVGumption. And we also have a new shirt design up on Redbubble, which is a West Allen shirt design titled We Are, and it lists like all of the things that West Allen is. So you can check that out at our Redbubble shop, which is located on our podcast page. And yeah, so please do that if you have the time and the money to spare. Moving into news, we have Emily Bette Ricards has announced that she won't be back for season 8. Any thoughts on that?
I thought it was surprising at first that, because we're not even, it's not even close to like the end of the season, so I thought it was surprising that she would just drop it like on a random Saturday.
Yeah. She was like, guess what, guys? I'm done. I'm out.
You mean you'll be coming back for season 8? You mean like gone, or just like for the summer, or I don't know what's going on?
It was weird.
It made sense when I think someone else was saying that the play that she was going to be in was going to announce on like that next Tuesday, and the dates for the play are when she should be back in Vancouver filming. So obviously she had to like, you know, heads up, I'm not going to be there. Before like the play announcement dropped. So I get it now, but it was kind of surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also not that I guess it's understandable if she just wanted to let her fans know, like, but it feels like it's calculated because of course you could just announce that she's going to be in that play. And then just like Melissa being in the play when she should be filming Supergirl, they could have been like, oh, I'm sure they'll work around it. They could have let us guess for a couple more months, which I'm sure that CW would have preferred to do. But instead she was like, listen,
Nope.
Yeah.
Nothing else for me.
Exactly. It makes me feel like it wasn't like necessarily a parting on the best of terms. You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
I just mean like maybe like obviously I'm sure they didn't want her to go.
Well, you know, clearly, like, you know, I think like Steven had, he's already said like back in season 6, he was talking to the CW and the producers about like wanting season 7 to be his last.
Yeah.
And he was talking to the producers, you know, that he was talking to like the cast. He's like, look, I'm trying to get out. Y'all do what y'all got to do. And Emily's like, yes, I take that challenge. I'm going to run with it.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
Steven got locked into season 8. She's like, well, that sucks for you because I have a job.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think it's interesting. It's interesting. I'm surprised that they decide that they are going to go ahead with season 8 without her. Cause I, you know, I just feel like it's a little bit like who else watches aside from people who want to see Emily.
I still think this leads in. I know like some Anons are like skeptical of my Oliver dies in season 7 theory, but I still think like her not being in season 8 just still makes me think that Oliver's dying in season 7 because again, like why else
would
she go somewhere without him, or he like with all the stuff that she was doing in this season just to get him out of jail and to pull her family back together. It didn't really make sense, no matter how dangerous the situation was, that they would decide to split up again and live
separate.
And then also I'm thinking, because the Monitor still has not come back, and I think, you know, the season finales are going to have to tie back into the crossover for next season. So what I'm thinking is that maybe, you know, they go back to, like, revisit the whole birth scene and the finale. Mm-hmm. And whatever Oliver and Felicity are running from, that's, like, the moment, the worst possible moment that the Monitor comes in to, like, Thanos snap Oliver out of And maybe, like, he takes, you know, that astral plane that they were on, this last crossover where he and the monitor were talking about shooting shit and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe he'll go there, and then season 8, he can be, like, quote-unquote technically alive, but also technically dead in, like, the Arrowverse, and spend, like, the first 8 episodes trying to break out to get back to his family and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's how they could do it. And then, you know, after the crossover, like, he either dies again, for real, or he survives it, and then they can, maybe they can pay Emily enough money for, like, to come back for episode 10 and do, like, a future full family or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could do it that way.
Yeah. I'm still holding on to the idea that they're going to do more flash forwards in season 8.
Yeah.
Because Steven obviously doesn't want to be there all the time. But I was also surprised that she was leaving, because it was, it seemed abrupt on a Saturday. Like you guys said, she posted. But I also think that within, because I haven't seen the announcement for her play, so I think that they could have completely played it off. No one would have known the difference. But I feel like she's just really done with the show, and she's wanted to be out for a long time, and she's been booking stuff for a while. So she just found her out, and she just took it.
It's kind of funny, like, all in this, everything that she's been asking for like a long time, like with, especially with Smoke Technologies, it's all like falling like dominoes in this season, because she's like put her foot down that I'm not coming back. So
yeah, finally, and it also sounds like she's not going to come back for the crossover either.
Oh, really?
If she didn't,
I wouldn't blame her. I feel like they'll probably get her back, but I wouldn't blame her if she didn't come back.
Yeah, just because it seems like very final.
Because, like, I would imagine, like, if the season 7 finale, I do think they're going to revisit, like, the whole Cabin in the Woods situation. Mm-hmm. And if from that situation is when she starts going on the run, because none of the rest of the Team Arrow outside of Diggle know that she had a baby. So I don't think, like, she's going to pop back up in the crossover, like, with me, Felicity and Mia, and also stopping the crisis kind of thing, so. And, like, I think someone was like, well, they're thinking that her pregnancy, birth, or whatever is going to be in, like, September or October or November or whatever of next year. But when the doctor called, they didn't say how far along Felicity was pregnant. So she could have been, you know, towards the end of her first trimester or whatever. So you don't know, we don't really know when the baby's going to be born. But I think it's going to be born in season, like, May in season 7, like season 7 finale.
I agree that the baby will probably be born in the season 7 finale. That being said, I think that if you get what you're hoping and dreaming of, which is that Oliver dies in the season 7 finale.
Sounds so sad.
Then I do think that the crossover could be the way that Felicity gets back in contact with the people. Because even though we know that they didn't see her, they didn't know about her child, they did, like, she did help out from time to time, right? Because that's why
Smoke Tech or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's why what's her face found her mom's hacker wall and was like, oh my god, you're a liar. So that could be like, maybe she does some hacking to save the world or whatever, you know. And if Oliver isn't dead and instead he somehow characteristically yet not in line with this season's arc sends Felicity and the baby away to be safe and whatever, right, in hiding, this would be their, like, big reunion before he dies. So, like, either way, I think that they would want to include some scenes with her. If they don't get her, then they don't get her. But that's what I would imagine they would want.
Yeah. Never miss an opportunity to steal the thunder.
Exactly.
Just when we hope.
They're like, how can we make sure that Wes Allen does not get the biggest melon? So anyway,
actually,
other things, like, happened this week.
Yeah, but one of my hopes was that, not that I was happy that Emily was leaving, but it did make me think about the crossover and how maybe, just maybe, Flash would be a little bit more central now that Felicity won't be kind of like taking over. But we'll see. In other news, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker movie trailer dropped. And it was interesting, and I don't know that we needed it, but it exists.
I saw it, and someone else said, I think they tweeted this, and I agree. Like, I don't know if it looks good because the person editing the trailer was just good at their job and what they do. Because like with like the music choices and everything like that, it looks very like artistic and all this kind of stuff. So I don't really know if it's like good because the actual movie looks good or it's just good because the promo department needs a bonus for the quality of their work.
That's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Like, the way that I saw the trailer, and the trailer looks good, but I don't know if the story itself is particularly like, oh, there was this man, exactly, and bad things happened to him, so then he became bad.
Yeah.
I'm amazed.
I mean, I'm sure Joaquin Reed Phoenix will put in a good performance.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know about the movie either, so we'll just have to wait and see.
I'm sure it'll be a good story in and of itself, but even just like the fact that it's the Joker. And you know how one of the biggest things about Batman is like, did he create his villains, right? Like what came first, Batman or his villains? So if you have a Joker movie without Batman, then...
And like a Joker like origin story.
Exactly. Then you have the answer. It wasn't Batman. Problem solved.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the thing that that's kind of, you know, makes me a little meh about it because like, I feel like there is no Joker origin story. It's kind of like that, like you said, like Batman or a villain, like which came first. And so if you tell that story, you give the answer, then it just kind of makes the Joker look more pathetic.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, oh, okay.
All right. That's what that was. Cool. Next movie.
Next movie is Birds of Prey. So there was a sneak peek shown. I think it was at CinemaCon, and a couple of journalists were saying that Harley is not a part of the Birds of Prey, but that she's kind of like on the side doing her own thing and is kind of a bit of an antagonist for them. So I thought that was really interesting.
I guess it makes sense because she'd have to start off as kind of an antagonist, one would think.
Right.
And it makes – like it seems like obvious that because of course they wouldn't put Harley in the Birds of Prey because, you know – riots and all of that kind of stuff, and like she's not a bird of prey, so I don't know that I really learned anything from the sneak peek that I didn't already kind of know or suspect.
Yeah, because the title kind of gives it away, right? It's like Birds of Prey and the Emancipation of Harley Quinn something
blah blah blah.
And then for Titans season 2, Karan Walters who plays Jason Todd, has been promoted to series regular, so it's not surprising. But there's like
coming back.
Yeah, not surprising. But there are so many characters, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And like, I'm reaching like my white man limit.
Yeah.
So no more.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Only a certain amount. We're good.
Yep, we have reached the quota.
Yeah. And then this is news to me. So Idris Elba isn't playing Deadshot in the new Suicide Squad movie. He's going to play a new character.
Yep. That's what we just learned. Or it's the latest rumor because they keep changing their minds or whatever. I don't know what's going on. Something new every day. So I think this is for the best in that it makes more sense to bring him on as a new character than to change Deadshot. Plus, if the rest of the cast isn't going to be there, then you don't really need to keep Deadshot. Oh, and I forgot the other thing. The other part of the rumor was that Viola Davis will be back.
Yay.
Which, that's very good.
That's the only part of the rumor that I care about.
Yes, that's the, like, that's what I'm like, that's unequivocally good, you know? Because you want to have some sense of stability, and it makes sense for Amanda Waller to be the one that's, you know, like, well, that first one went awry, let's try it again, you know? So, anyway.
Yay, Amanda. Yay, Viola. All right. Now we have some feedback from Shang, who is the only one who sent us feedback this week.
The rest of y'all quit with Arrow and Flash. We see you.
I don't know what had Legends feedback. It's back and no one cares. But Shang cares. So he says that, first of all, he thanks Bebo for this podcast to distract me from the pain of smashing into the bleachers while walking to the medic center. Please, Shang, don't hurt yourself, first of all.
That's kind of funny that you get hurt walking to the medical center. Like, did you know? Were you psychic?
He was close enough. In terms of Legends feedback, he says, to be honest, I didn't really see the Ava and Sarah fight as out of character because they both made reasonable points. Ava has always been more pragmatic and closed up her emotions, especially when it's work-related. Sarah thinks more with her heart that the ends just do not justify the means. Interesting. He was saying, Mona is canon Cantonese. Representation feels great. And about her parents, he can 100% can relate to that. And it was a small scene, but as someone with that kind of relationship with his parents, it shook me to the core. So I'm really glad that that was confirmed. And then, are they making Nate and Zari a thing? I actually quite like their buddy cop chemistry feel to them as a couple. I'm not too sure as of right now. We also feel the same way.
I'm about sure Nate the answer is no. I don't want that.
In terms of Supergirl feedback, he got three consecutive great episodes. Who would have known? Kara, Alex, and Lena are the best trinity. You can't change my mind. Love that Kara apologized. Took her a whole season, but it finally happened. Kara being vulnerable and finally speaking her feelings. I love her for me. I think what is so great about the tension is that both sides are right, yet both sides are wrong, and they both should acknowledge that, which is why I'm hoping Lena would apologize for allowing Lex in on her experience later on. Lena is going to pull Linda back together with Kara using science. I refuse to have Linda dying. He was asking, do you think Eve has more Haranel with her and Lex decides to inject different humans with it?
Do we think that Eve has more Haranel with her and Lex decides to inject different humans with it? Probably.
Yeah, I'm sure she's
sounds like something he would do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure that Eve is smart enough to replicate some more, or however much they need.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Finally, number five, we have someone that tells the Super Friends to go for therapy. Kelly outsold already. James definitely has PTSD, and I hope he takes a referral seriously. Thank you, Shang, for your feedback, and of course, we'll be posting that to our Tumblr. Now getting into the meat of the episode, we have three shows this week, Supergirl on side A, Legends of Tomorrow, and Doom Patrol on side B, likes, dislikes, and we'll discuss the Lady with Gumption of the Week. And Jessica is our lovely host this week, so take it away, Jess.
Okay, so side A, Supergirl, crazy Lex girlfriend. This was the episode we were supposed to find out all about Eve. To recap, Supergirl must deal with the destructive aftermath of Lex's nefarious plans. Shocked at what Lex has created, Supergirl faces her biggest challenge yet. Ben Bray directed the episode with story by Gabriel Yanis and teleplay by Katie Rose Rogers and Brooke Pohl. Also, what happened in this episode on the non-Lex side was that James is going through PTSD and discovering the whole process of being shot and coming back to work, and his sister Kelly is trying to get him to go to therapy, and James is not having any of it, and that causes some issues. So, all of that happened.
The way you said he's discovering the process of getting shot, I was like, it sounds like the wonders. He's learning out the wonders of getting
the
shot
wonders.
And then suffering.
And living through it. I was totally rambling, but I didn't write that down. So, that's off the dome, people. But anyway, what did we like about this All About Eve episode that was not really about Eve?
I think the episode knocked most of its material out of the park. I love the team up between Supergirl, Alex, and Lena. It's like we've been waiting so long for them to interact in this way and for Supergirl and Lena to finally make up, and the wait really paid off. I think they made such a strong team and worked really well together. Supergirl admitting that it wasn't that she had a big ego, but that she felt the weight of the world on her shoulders was really good. And I don't think we've had Kara talk about the way she's been feeling in a long time, since she's been emotionally supporting a lot of other characters this season. So this truly felt like a great moment for her to open up. And to do so in front of Lena was even better, because it's been ages since the writers had any meaty scenes between the two. And I'm glad I got to a point that Supergirl apologized and acknowledged that Lena could also have a point. I think it was definitely helped out by Alex getting her to hear Lena out, and that was the straw that finally broke Kara and allowed her to cave under the emotional burden she's been feeling. And I also like that Lena and Colonel Haley ultimately believed Supergirl and that she wouldn't put people in harm's way on purpose. I also thought it was funny and cute that Kara brought a peace offering in the form of donuts. John's arc coming to a head really put things in a perspective for him, and I like that it was really him talking it out with himself, but that his conscience took the form of Mirren. He really was a sight for sore eyes, and I didn't realize it until he showed up how much I'd miss his presence on the show. He knew exactly how to get under Jean's skin to get to the source of what was going on. And I like that it led to Jean acknowledging and coming to terms with the fact that he wasn't his dad, but that he'd been trying to be. I'm glad he came to terms of who he was at his core. It was really satisfying, and I think David Harewood really nailed the emotional scenes and Jean's internal struggle. I also really like that the episode found a way to deal with James's PTSD and that his experience wasn't just swept under the rug and forgotten about. Though it took another traumatic event for him to admit that he should seek help, I'm glad that he did and happy that Kelly was there for him. It didn't last long, but I love that one politician wasn't on board with whatever Lockwood was selling and that she initially wasn't going to back the repeal act. For a second, I enjoyed watching his smug smile fall. So 4 for you, random politician lady. And then finally, I like that even though he wasn't in the episode, Lex's plan was starting to truly come into fruition after brainwashing Linda to do his bidding. Now that everyone knows she exists, we can really move into the next phase of the plot.
I actually didn't realize that Lex wasn't in the episode until you just said that. And that's like how much Lex's presence was in the episode, that it just felt like he was there.
Yeah, it could have been called All About Lex. And it would have been truer than the current title of the episode. But I also loved everything having to do with Lena, Alex, and Supergirl herself, because obviously she was there as Supergirl and not as Kara. But I liked how all three of them showed off like their intelligence, their teamwork, and also the camaraderie that they had each other's backs. It was interesting to watch Lena and Alex both interacting with Supergirl while neither of them no, she's Kara, because it does, like, it evens the playing field more in terms of, like, no one person is left out, and it also makes them see Supergirl in a more disinterested or unbiased light, so they are able to say, like, no, I don't like that Supergirl, and, you know, defend each other to her instead of both defending Kara, because Kara is more important to them than they are to each other.
Right.
And I also liked that Kara was able to apologize to Lena and also open up about her insecurities as Supergirl. Again, it helped Lena and Alex understand her better, and then it allowed them to take her side when White House Down occurred. I also liked seeing Lena and Lillian's, like, game of chess, right? Her face off against her mother, and the fact that Lena got the upper hand just because Lex is a little piece of shit. Like, she didn't have to outsmart anyone. She was like, listen, I am the superior child because I'm not actively trying to kill you. So maybe you should listen to me. I also liked that even though her mom tried to get into her head about her friends, her first reaction was to just dive in further into the investigation. Even if she was a little bit like, oh, what, are you investigating me now? She was still like, I want to be part of it and I want to help and I want to make sure that I make myself useful and that I prove my mother and myself wrong, you know, that people are not going to abandon me because of what I have done. And she proved herself right, wrong, whatever. They didn't abandon her is what I'm saying. So she went for it and then she got what she would have liked, but what she was afraid she would not get. Okay. And also, I just like seeing Lillian get a taste of her own medicine, right? Because it's like, she's so proud of Lex for being, like, the more villainous child. Like, who's proud of that? And, like, the more, like, genius one or whatever. But, like, what good is it for him to be the best at what he's doing if what he's doing is trying to kill you? Dumbass. Even though Haley didn't have much to do in the episode, I really liked that we're already seeing the shift with her. Ever since she found out that the president was a little shady bitch, she was immediately willing to let Alex and Supergirl go work the Lex angle by themselves, you know, and even, like, cover for them for whatever extent. And then at the end of the episode, even though her eyeballs were seeing evidence of Supergirl attacking the White House, her brain was like, nope, I agree, it could not have been Supergirl. So I like that when she sees things clearly, we see that she is on the right side of history. I like John reclaiming his Martian Manhunter title. It was really nice to see, as well as, you know, finally getting that approval from his father, even if it really was his own vision of his father. It wasn't actually Mirren, but the point is that he was able to accept himself via his father's, his perceived, you know, father's acceptance of him. Also, glad to see him be confident in himself, and realize that he can help Earth and humans and aliens and everyone on Earth in the way that suits him best. He doesn't have to be just like following in his father's footsteps. Also, I liked how the James and Kelly story turned out. I liked that he finally asked for help, that he accepted that he was suffering PTSD, and that the show is letting him deal with those traumas that he's undergone. Because as we've seen in previous seasons, James and his connection to the Luthers and his connection to Superman, etc., like his importance in the mythos, has been swept under the rug often. Like when Clark would come to town and not even speak to James, as if they were not best friends. So I'm glad that now they're actually letting him take his place in that story. We're seeing that Lex does have a specific reason to be out for him too, you know, and that James has a reason to fear Lex. Finally, I liked seeing Ben being a dumbass puppet. I appreciated that before, I don't know what Lex did to make everything work out, right, and to make the senator change her mind. But before that happened, the senator lady was telling Ben, like, you know, aliens are going to retaliate, and I don't want that. So your plan is stupid, and I'm not going to do that. This is Congress, not, you know, your little rabble rousing Agent Liberty shit.
Confederate party.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I appreciated that. And I also loved when James called Ben out and was like, oh yeah, you're working with Lex. Like, what do you feel about working with Lex? And Ben was like, what? I would never work with Lex. Like, that's not my brand. I'm like, but it is. You don't, yeah, you don't even know. Yeah. So I like that a lot. All right.
Yeah. I, like, once again, I feel like Supergirl had a really solid episode. It wasn't as good as the House of L last week, but it just finally feels like the season has settled into its real big bad and the real story arc of the season. And I can, like, I feel like I see now why I needed to suffer for 13 to 14 episodes with, like, Ben Lockwood and Agent Liberty and all this crap. But part of me wishes that we could have seen, like, Lex pulling the strings behind the first half of the season, because then I'd feel less frustrated. Because, like, obviously, like, Lex, too, thinks Ben Lockwood is an idiot, so I'd be like, yes, we can relate. But, like, I also kind of like the rapid unveil that they're doing now, so, you know, pros and cons, or whatever. But for this episode, like, a minor, like, to get out of the way, I like that Haley believed Alex when she said Supergirl wouldn't do this, particularly because I think a lot of people, as in audience, general audience, expected Haley to, like, go on the war path against Supergirl, and that's not, like, it's not who she is. And I've defended her before, like, back in the past when she went on, like, the find Supergirl's identity kind of thing. And I feel like Alex's amnesia has worked double-fold, not only for her relationship with Kara versus Supergirl, but also with her relationship and seeing Haley and seeing Haley's side and you know, Haley becoming more human to not only Alex but the rest of the audience as well, and that she's not like an inherently bad person. She's just kind of like a strict the protect the military and all this kind of stuff, like the like a military minded mm-hmm. person. But when she sees that order, the order that she is in charge of, like, creating and protecting and enforcing, the top is rotten, and she's starting to see that, then you kind of see her, like, change in a little bit from how, like, she is seeing herself in the DEO. The fact that when Kara came as Supergirl bringing, like, donuts and was, like, brought up a really, like, logical plan that we need to go after Lex, that she was, you know, she is somebody that kind of see that and see that that's what they should be doing and allowed Alex and Supergirl to do that, while she also continued to do the job that she needed to be done. Like, you have to, like, do the job. It might not be the thing that you want to do or that you like to do, but it is the job that you have to do. So I liked all, the whole Haley of it. And like, I'm giving credit to the donut peace offering. So good job, Kara. Like, no one who comes bearing cinnamon crullers can be evil. And I like that, you know, in the end, like, Haley's trust, and they have like an established trust now that they didn't have before. I think both were like suspicious of each other. So like all of that. There's like minimal Brainy in this episode, but I did appreciate the moment where Kara gave him his Legion ring back. I just thought like that shot of them walking up the stairs was aesthetically nice. The OT3 of Kara, Alex, and Lena working together. They worked really well together, and it's particularly interesting because, like Tati said before, it's now Kara hiding her identity from both Alex and Lena, instead of just one. So you see these like subtle dynamic shifts in how they all interact together. Like when Alex stands up to Supergirl to defend Lena, when they find like the Harnell. Because old Alex, who had her memories, may have like held back or not have said anything or tried to get Lena to see Supergirl's side because she knows her sister. But now Amnesia Alex is able to defend Lena, and get Supergirl to see past her kind of issues to understand Lena more. So you got like, because Amnesia Alex doesn't know Supergirl past the fact that she's Supergirl. So you see like this kind of difference in their like relationship and how they work together. And I also like that argument didn't end on a sour note because last time they had an argument, it was really bad for both Kara and Lena. But this time, I don't know if it's because Alex was there to defend Lena because she didn't know Kara was Supergirl or what, but I think instead of it ending unsourly and breaking apart this great partnership that they had from the beginning of the episode, Kara kind of saw like their point of view and was able to show some like vulnerability and revealing like how she feels with like the weight of the world and having to protect it and everything. And then it ends up with her apologizing to Lena for, you know, snapping at her. So it was all like really, really great how that all unfolded. And then at the end, it's rewarded when Kara is afraid that she's going to be judged by both women, when the whole White House down thing happens, but they make sure that she knows that they believe her and they're willing to do what it takes to support her. So this whole episode is like women supporting women. You've got Haley supporting Supergirl and Alex and Lena, and Supergirl supporting Lena over, you know, that she's not this bad person. So it's all good stuff. Nice seeing Kara Lumley back as Niren. And I like that the resolution was that it was okay for John to be Martian Manhunter because that's who he is, and that Niren was okay with that. It makes me feel better about the whole Manchester Black resolution too, because it doesn't feel like John has lost anything personally, like in his character and who he is. Because last week, I think it was last week or whenever it was that, you know, he winds up killing Manchester Black, it felt like he lost something. It felt like he failed. And he felt like he failed, and that's why he did like this meditation thing. But I like that the resolution was that you didn't fail, you just, this is who you are, and it's okay that this is who you are. And I thought that David Harewood and Carl Lindley had some really powerful scenes together. So that was great. I cared very little for Lockwood and DC plot, but I did appreciate that finally there's another senator bringing up the alien vote and powerful aliens. Like, aliens are citizens too in this country, and some of them are probably rich and have good connections with the government because they know stuff like this is probably going to be happening at some point or another. So I'm pretty sure that there are some powerful aliens with connections or bribes or blackmail with like certain people in the government that Ben and President Baker just should not be able to steamroll a repeal through Congress without any like pushback. So that seemed really unrealistic. So I'm glad that they finally showed like the other side, the politics side of this whole situation. And then finally, I feel like I'm like recapping the whole episode because I just liked a lot of it, but like the whole sequence of like James going to the White House with Kara and him like accusing Ben Lockwood of working with Lex and Ben's confusion because he's a puppet, and then Kara getting like surprised by Hollow Eve and getting paralyzed by that radiation suit, and then James has this PTSD attack when like Linda Lee comes in, and she's like all this kind of stuff. The whole act of how all of that played out and how all of it kind of like unraveled and blew up at the end was so good. And it makes it, that was, it's like a legit cliffhanger that makes you really want to see, like, what is the fallout? What's going to happen? Supergirl's public enemy number one. All of that was great. And so I guess like the back third of Supergirl is my jam apparently, because I'm like really excited to see what happens when it comes back from hiatus. So now, finally, moving into things that we did not like. What were they?
Ooh.
As much as I'm happy that Brandy got his Legion ring back, I wonder why it was even a thing that it got taken away to begin with. It held no real merit on the story beyond him feeling bad about it, and there weren't any significant, without it, I can't get back to my time moments that impacted him. So I was mostly meh about it being returned to him, and I think the episode was all less about Eve than the title led us to be. It was more about, like, finding Eve. I honestly thought it would play out a lot like the House of L episode, except this time it would flash back to Eve's story. But beyond the writers being really into the fact that Eve really loved Lex, they gave us nothing else. We didn't understand why she was really helping him, and the reveal of her password being "I love Lex" just made her come off like a 13-year-old with a massive crush. And instead of explaining why someone who was intelligent enough on her own wanted to work with Lex, they just gave us that. Finally, though I like that James did get a subplot following his traumatic shooting by someone he thought he trusted, I thought the sibling fight between him and Kelly fell off, primarily because we don't know Kelly well enough to understand why it was that she and James don't really talk. I think they just used that drama to have them fight when they could have just had James be stubborn and believe that he was truly okay when he wasn't. There was no need for that other stuff.
Yes. I agree with that last point, but I will get to it later. And first I will say that, yeah, we did not learn much about Eve at all. It was not all about Eve. And the things that we did supposedly learn about Eve, I did not like. Just like the reduction of her to a Lex-obsessed fangirl is just so cliche and boring. And it doesn't explain or like even match with what we've seen about her in the last like what season and a half or whatever, where suddenly she's like a genius level intellect who could like cure cancer alongside Lena. Now, if she wasn't that, but we know she is, like if he had been like feeding her information through a mic or whatever the whole time through a headset, then that'd be one thing. But no, instead she's like super smart, hardworking, whatever lady who just also is like
crazy.
Yeah. You know, a Manson girl. So, like, whatever. Boring. And like, while it was nice, and, like, maybe some kind of, like, adding of depth that she wanted to help her aunt / cousin, it was very different from last week when we saw Otis helping that kid. Because, like, you actually see it happen. And you're like, oh, he's a person, too. Whereas with this, it was just like, this happened! And we didn't even see her do it. Like, that could have been two scenes where we see her actually go to help her aunt / cousin.
And then after that, like, after that scene with her aunt / cousin, you get a scene with, like, Eve and Linda, and yeah. She is not being nice.
Exactly, where she's just like, ah! So anyway, whatever, it was just weird. I was like, okay, thank you for telling me that, but it was useless, because nothing has changed. Okay, Kara giving Brainy his ring back, it's exactly what May said. It was super, like, underwhelming and random to me. Like, I expected when I got it back, I was like, okay, so something's gonna happen now. He's gonna do something with this ring this episode. But nothing happened with the ring. So I was like, wait, okay, why did we show the ring giving back, and why was it taken?
See, like, the aesthetics. The aesthetics. They did it for the aesthetics, that's all. Kara ducks crumbs.
They did it for the vine. So, which is dead. So... anyway, it did make me wonder why they had taken it from him in the first place, because I don't remember like it really mattering to that group of people who were hanging out with Magister that also don't matter anymore, because that entire plotline has been thrown away. So anyway, that's all. I was just like, what happened? Finally, it's not really finally, but whatever. The opening scene, especially with James and Kelly, well, whatever, just basically the beginning, the first half of their storyline, all the little fighting. It was, like, really abrupt and strange. Again, May already said it. But, like, I know he's going through a lot. And so I understand that he's being stressed about it. But, like, the way that they fought and the things that he said made me feel like they have, like, a super strained relationship that is, like, affects their lives. In which case, it would have been nice to know something about that in the last 4 years instead of, like, not even knowing that James has family members. So I don't know. It was a little bit like, oh, okay, let's just drop this in your lap. And I hope, I mean, I hope we're going to delve into that more now that she's going to be a regular. But it was super weird to introduce in this way in this episode. And then finally, this one's a real finally. I know that Mirren was just John's conscience and it wasn't actually Mirren. So that's like why he's such an asshole. But like at first I was like, what is going on? This is so mean. Why is the dad being like this? Why is the projection of the father like this? So I didn't like that. And then at the end, it's still like John still doesn't get to keep the symbols. That was really strange. Like, I don't know why he can't just pass on Martian history. Like, it's still, he's not worthy. So I was like, oh, okay. But he was nice about it in the end. He's like, you still can't have him, but I love you. Even though you're worthless. You're the best. Okay, that's all.
I thought it was, like, I guess about that, but I thought it was the way that it worked out. Like, it was a lot for Mirren to leave that on John, because John's felt like he's been, like, the last Martian for, like, ever. And then he finds out that he's not. And that his dad's still alive. And then his dad dies. And now he's back to being like, I might be the last Martian ever. And so there's like all this like pressure of him to like hold on to these symbols. And now he's like, okay, I don't have to do that anymore. I can just leave them in the desert until some more worthy comes along and you hold these symbols. It worked out.
It worked out. Everything's good. Everything's good.
Takes the pressure off. But yeah, like my dislikes are usually y'all's dislikes. Like the episode was titled All About Eve, but it was barely about her. And I was expecting to learn more about her, and I was expecting to really like deep dive into Eve the way we deep dove into like Linda Lee and Lex, the previous episode. But she still seems really shallow and very two dimensional as she always has. Like her only driving motivation is that she loves Lex, but there's zero information or like reason that tells us like how or why she became attracted to him enough to like want to follow him and kill him, because like I said, like she's an intelligent person on her own. She probably could have had a career, a very successful career in like her field and what she wanted to do. So what was it about Lex? And Lex wasn't even like looking for her, like she came to him. So like what was it about him that made her this insane over someone that she hasn't met? Like what is it, like what makes her tick that her ideologies align with his? Like how did that happen? We didn't learn any of that, so now I'm back to confirming why I never liked her in the first place.
And the only thing we did learn was that she loves her cousin.
Great. yeah. and I didn't like the Kelly James scenes enough to put it in my likes, because like I think it's because like y'all are saying about your dislikes, the whole first half of that arc was just really kind of like petty arguing between them, and we don't really know enough about James and Kelly's relationship prior to him getting almost killed 8 times for to know why it's this bad between them or why it's strained between them. So even though like I can relate to, well, I can't relate, but I can understand or sympathize with James trying to process being shot and almost dying. His kind of reactions to Kelly trying to help him just made him seem not likable or less likable one in the situation, because I know that she's the one that's actually like trying to help. And it, so like his resistance was more, it seemed like there was more than just like resistance because he had PTSD. There's also a resistance because of their relationship, and I just don't really know what that is to be able to be on like James's side about, you know, not wanting help from Kelly. So yeah, I didn't really like most of that story. Yeah, so that's that on that. Predictions. What do you predict about what's going to happen when we come back from hiatus?
That Brainy's Legion ring will be put to good use in the next episode so that it justifies it being taken away in the first place.
I get on board with that. I don't have any predictions.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I think I even said it. Like, we're all like, what does this mean? Like, why are they even giving the ring back? And I was like, well, maybe he'll put it to good use in the next episode. And then we'll figure out why. But I also think, like, one thing that I thought was really interesting is in the White House scene at the end, when James is like confronting Ben with working with Lex, Ben's kid kind of like subtly like moves back, like, oh, what's going on? So I think Ben Lockwood's kid was never at the White House to begin with, and it was just like Otis pretending to be the kid, like Eve was pretending to be that lady with like the hologram technology.
Interesting.
Yes. So I think that that was Otis and not the kid. That was one. And then, this isn't really a prediction, but I'm just very scared and traumatized for Brainy already. In that promo clip when he's like, when Agent Liberty like picks him up by like his collar, basically. I'm very scared for my child. So prayers for Brainy. That's Aww. Scary. That's like traumatizing. Like this is like the equivalent of like the head of the Ku Klux Klan like coming into my house and like, you know, threatening me physically. So that's like traumatizing, man.
For sure. Hopefully he'll be okay.
Do we have a Lady with Gumption nomination for Supergirl episode? It's not you, so don't even. I put my foot down on that
She
one.
Had a brief nomination last week, and then that just failed.
It's a brief moment of sanity, and now you're back. Insanity.
I would say Kara, actually. Because I think that she had this fight with Lena about all the Harrenell stuff and kryptonite and everything last season. And I think she finally got to a point where she was able to be vulnerable and come to the DEO even and offer up a peace offering so that they could work together. And she was able to admit that, you know, it wasn't her ego and she apologized, which took a lot from her, I'm sure, especially since she and Lena had been having like that fight for a long time. So I think it should go to Kara.
Kathy?
All right. Lady with Gumption from this one show.
Yeah.
Kara. I'm going to say Kara. For the same reasons, or for half the reasons that I heard of you. But yes, that she actually was vulnerable. She apologized when she was wrong. She worked well with others. She listened to reason. And she, you know, went all the way as far as she could go. Until she fell into that trap. But that's okay. It's not her fault.
It's not her fault. I'm gonna go rogue and I'm gonna say Lena.
Oh,
because
you're so ugly. I'm just kidding. You're very beautiful.
Oh my gosh. Say Lena because I think that she probably felt that a lot of this whole like Lex escaping and Eve being evil was her fault somehow. And the fact that she made Harrenell with Eve and Eve's now using that to create other monsters with Lex, I think she felt like a lot of responsibility for it. And so when Alex came to her and she was like worried, first she was like worried that, you know, Alex would judge her. And then she was determined to correct her wrongs. And she's like, I'm not just going to tell you where Eve is. I'm also going with you because one, you need me because two, this is, she took it on as like her responsibility as well. So I like that she was going to not just let this mistake and like define like her and let her like go into like a downward spiral, but she was going to do something about it. She wasn't going to let Eve or Lex take this like everything she's worked for and do evil with it. So I like that. So super core, Lady with Gumption. Week for side A. And now we're moving on to side B, which is Legends of Tomorrow and Doom Patrol, team building / morally corrupt. So first up on Legends of Tomorrow, we have Lucha de Apuestas. And the recap, believe it or not, when the legends hear that Mona has let a fugitive go, they must head to 1961 Mexico City, where everyone speaks English, to clean up her mess. Mona tries to convince the legends and the Bureau that the people responsible for releasing the fugitive, who is the Cope, her / wolf boyfriend, Konane, that there was some mysterious men in black that took Konane and not her, but with no evidence to back up her theory, the legends must decide if they should trust her and go against the Bureau. Specifically, Sarah must decide whether she should trust Mona over her girlfriend, Ava. Meanwhile, Nate and Zari go on a recon mission to find out what Hank might be hiding from everyone. And it turns out he is hiding a lot. Andrew Cash directed this episode, written by Kito Shimizu and Tyron B. Carter. What did we like?
Did they not reveal on Legends that whenever they go somewhere, they just automatically get translated into whatever the language is?
I mean, they do. Like, I feel like they've revealed that before, but I also feel like they could have at least attempted to show them speaking.
Yes.
Yeah, Spanish. For sure.
Yes.
For sure. And with that, Tati, would you like to go first?
Sure. I thought that Mona showed a lot of resilience and was very crafty this episode. I was proud of her. It was one of definitely, I think it's like my favorite for her so far. I loved how she turned that little Men in Black memory thing back on Gary, left the poor guy wondering what happened to his nipple, which was a humorous moment. And I also liked that at the end she was wise enough to let Kanani go back to his world and realize that she can't just go with him because then she's running away, that she has her own world that she needs to face first. So that was nice. Also, I thought it was cute that she was like a big fan of Mick's books, didn't know that he was the writer, and that, you know, her pure of heartness was like enough to get him to stop being an asshole for like 2 seconds. That was beautiful. So thank you for that, Mona. Yes, exactly. I also liked how Sarah's first instinct when she heard about the Bureau cover-up possibility was like, oh, well, Ava can't be involved. There can't be a Bureau cover-up because then Ava would know and Ava wouldn't allow it. So that was cute. But at the same time, she was open to hearing the truth and she was open to letting people investigate. And then once she found out the truth, she pursued that avenue and she tried to inform Ava while also still doing, you know, doing what she had to do to make sure that things went right. I thought she was a very effective leader in this episode. I also really liked the tango scene. It was very well choreographed, and it was a clever way to disguise the information they were trying to share, even though Ava was not clever enough to hear it. Also, I enjoyed Constantine just like standing in the back with a cigarette while everyone was fighting at the end. And I also liked the little mini friendship he struck up with El Santo. Also, Constantine and Charlie convincing Ray that it was time to let them out to, you know, do some good and save history, despite like them being in timeout for being bad with breaking the timeline before, was very cute. I really loved the way that Nate dealt with finding out about his dad. I thought he handled it maturely. He immediately provided the information, right? He didn't try to like figure it out on his own. He immediately told Zari, oh, that's my dad's number. And he was willing to investigate immediately, although he also asked Zari not to jump to conclusions until they had the facts, which I thought was a sane way of doing things. And once they did have the facts, he let his father think everything was cool, but also started plotting at the same time. So I was like, good job, Nate. And also, I was glad we got to see Zari be a hacker again this episode, and that her skills were put to good use, and she kept a cool head throughout as well. So there was lots of characters that I was proud of this week.
All right. I'm glad they finally got back to the Mona subplot because they never did address it in the mid-season finale. The show was really going for a Beauty and the Beast type of storyline, and in this case, it mostly worked, if only because Mona was concerned for Kanane's safety. And this is strangely better than any potential romance they were going to have with her and Gary. I like that she rescued him from the Bureau and sent him to a different era to keep him safe. And I like that the Legends believed her and helped her do the protecting, and that Sarah tried to convince Ava that Mona was doing the right thing throughout the episode. I thought it was funny that Mona read Mick's books and that he actually gave some not so bad advice about there not always being a happy ending, but that he also let her believe that for the most of the episode because he felt like she needed it, which I think was really nice of Mick, whom I don't think very highly of usually. Actually, most of what I liked were the little things, like how Sarah told Ray he was to take over as captain of the Wave Rider while she was out, and how he was so happy about that, didn't want to mess anything up while she was away, but then was easily convinced that they could set Mexico's history back to what it was before by Constantine and Charlie. I also love that he had a game plan to help the team get to know each other better, which is classic Ray. And the only Ava Lance scene I did like during the episode is the one where they were doing the tango while arguing. The first time I watched it, I completely didn't hear anything they were saying because their dancing was very distracting. So the fact that they pulled it off the way that they did was great. So I had to rewind and watch it again. And some of this will be in my dislikes, but I did like that the episode reminded us that Zari was a hacker, like Tati said, and that she brought her thoughts about Hank being shady to Nate and that they worked together to steal his phone to find out what really happened with the camera footage. And finally, I'm not sure whether I like this 100% or not, but I am intrigued with the plot twist of Mona turning into Cope and seeing where it goes now that the team is harboring two magical creatures.
Cool, cool, cool.
Tell us your likes.
Clearly they weren't as much as ours.
There
were too many. They're too many. She can't put them in order.
Right. That's it. I did like the whole Mona Konane Mick plot, where, you know, like how she's trying to help Konane get back, and you know, like the whole kind of like Beauty and the Beast lover's angle. Some of it is a little weird, but it kind of weird works for the legends. I liked how she was using Mick's books, that she didn't even know that Mick was a writer, but like she was talking about like the love story and why Konane needed to fake be defeated or fake lose to El Santo, and the reasons for that and why that was a noble thing to lose on purpose sometimes, and you know, the whole kind of wanting to be together and run away together, but then like, you know, they're from two worlds, they can never work. that whole thing like was really cute. And I did like on like back on the Wave Rider Bureau side of it, Sarah's openness to, because there are a lot of things that I didn't like, but Sarah's openness to exploring other avenues, and that Zari was like, well, what if? And she let her go down that path, and, you know, the fact that she, when something comes up that is a little shady, Sarah's first thought is that the Bureau may be shady, but Ava is not. So, like, the trust that she has in Ava, because I feel like old Sarah, you know, previous seasons of the Avalanche romance story, that knowing that something could be shady in the Bureau would have been enough to maybe shake Sarah's trust in Ava as well. And so it kind of shows like how far that they've come in their relationship, that Sarah is like, definitely Ava is not involved in this. And if she, you know, she doesn't know about it, and we need to protect Ava as well. So it was like, that was really good to see like how much Sarah believed in Ava. And then I really like the Avalanche Tango. I thought it was visually very nice. And I like the way that they use that to use visually something that was really nice, something that would be kind of like really good for like fandom gift sets and all that kind of stuff. But they also included plot and drove plot while giving them a reason to be tangling on the dance floor. So, and I also like that massive like brawl in Mexico City, like when the agents come in and try to like break up the fight, and then the legends, Charlie and John particularly, riled up the entire like stadium to do like this massive brawl. I thought that was really fun. So yeah, what did we not like about this episode?
I did not like many things. I don't know if it's because I don't know if like I'm just like was like oversensitive about the episode, or if I'm just annoyed because my live stream kept cutting out the first time I watched it. But I feel like they didn't even bother trying to represent Mexico City or Lucha Libre. It was just like, they're wrestling, and then someone has this gold mascot.
Yeah.
You know, as Jessica will say, no one even tried to speak, or she kind of said it in the
recap. Yeah. Because,
yeah. Anyway, no one spoke any Spanish.
It's kind of like the New Orleans episode. Like, it was set in New Orleans, but it wasn't really about New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it could have taken place in Alabama, for all I know. They could have literally just gone to, like, a random wrestling, like, and, like, the birth of just American wrestling or whatever. It would have been exactly the same. Like, El Santo is a real dude, right? And he was known for his silver mask, so I don't know why his mask was gold, but whatever. Maybe it wasn't gold. Maybe it just looked gold to me. But his mask is silver. And the entire, like, his contribution to the sport, like, making the sport, like, a nationwide, like, event, and also, like, you know, upping the role in media of media in Mexico, like, could have been its own episode. And, like, Constantine could have been like the fan, the person that knows it or whatever, or Mona could have been a fan of it because she's a fan of random things like Mick's book. But either way, like, they could have had an episode where that was actually a focus, the way that like P.T. Barnum Circus was or whatever, you know. But instead he's just like some dude who sucks in comparison to Konane, and I didn't like even realize who he was in the episode. Like, I knew, I was like, he must be a real person because they said he was a real person, but like there was no defining characterization,
right? It was only like those two lines from John Constantine were the only thing that I knew about this guy named El Santo.
And I thought it was really weird that, like, El Lobo became, like, a hero of the people in Distrito Federal. Like, why? There's, like, just, like, some dude who can't even speak shows up and just beats people up. And they're like, he's a hero of the people! To the point that if they were to take him away, there would be riots about censorship. And I was like, that's okay. Whatever. I don't know. I just felt like it just made, again, this crowd of faceless, nameless people look very stupid. Because again, you would think that censorship riots would hinge on El Santo, the actual hero of the people, and not Kunane, random man who does not know or care about the existence of the people. Anyway, at Ava Lance, it's not like their breakup that upsets me, but the way that Ava was written this week, or the way that she acted, just felt so off. Just like she was being really hypocritical, first of all, but it also just didn't feel like Ava to me. It just felt like what the writers wanted to happen in the form of Ava. Maybe it was just like an off, maybe it was like a different clone had come and taken over Ava, and we'll find this out later, because I was like, what is happening? Like, she's seen for herself that magical creatures are very much, you know, sentient creatures with feelings, even if they aren't always human. So it was really strange for her to be really callous about their treatment in this episode. And also to pick, like, this instance to explode about Sarah putting her job over Ava's. It just seemed really forced, because it was like, if it was a situation where they were both right, or they were both trying to do something good, and Ava and Sarah could have helped Ava and then work together, but instead put herself first, or put the legends first, and left Ava in the dust, then that'd be one thing. Like, I'd understand, like, oh, they both have a point, or whatever. But instead, it was like, Ava's just protecting this investment at the expense of, like, real lives and people slash creatures that her friends care about, right? Because if she lets Hank do whatever he wants to do, then obviously Konane's gonna die or be, you know, experimented on or whatever, and Nora would be in trouble, right? Because Nora is also there, and just like, and that's someone that Ray cares about. So just like, I just feel like these are people that are related to you in some way that you don't care about. And of course, Charlie, you know, if they find out about Charlie, then she could be in trouble too. So it's whatever. I just think it was really weird that Ava did not care about any of these things and was like, you should care about me more than these non-humans. It was like super, like, strange, bigoted argument.
Ava, you are also non-human.
Exactly. You're not a human either, Ava, you weirdo. But anyway. So yeah, I just don't understand why, like, her argument did not make sense. And I liked that Sarah didn't even, like, you know, Sarah didn't think her argument made sense either. So at least I liked that. But anyway, overall, the lack of denouement, like the lack of a conclusion or just like a really like explanation or like checkup after the mid-season finale was also really strange and abrupt. No one cared that time was broken, like, 300 times. And then, of course, the idea of Nate and Zari. I don't like it. I don't want it. I don't like that it was brought up. I don't want to go there. And not that I'm saying that, like, they definitely will because of this episode, but the telltale signs were there, and I want them to not be there anymore. Like, the fake dating trope, plus Nate being like, oh no, dating, that would be super weird if we dated, and Zari making whatever face, and then Nate being like, oh, you're blushing, or whatever. I was like, oh, no, I don't want it. Yeah, like, he had his romance for two full seasons, took up a lot of time, and, you know, he should just mourn that for another season. Just, you know, be alone, and Zari should love Charlie, so it's not even a question. That's all.
Yeah, I agree with all this. I didn't mention in my dislikes about the Mexico because it caused us so enraged about everything else. But I will second what you said. And yeah, I thought it was really weird that there was absolutely no follow through or check in regarding what happened in the mid-season finale, like you said. And Ava only mentioned the legends killing magical creatures in passing, but it was only to boost her argument. So Constantine didn't say anything about Desmond or spoke with Charlie even briefly, even though he was central to the whole thing. So it almost felt like it hadn't happened at all, which is frustrating because they fucked up time more than usual and no one's even talking about it.
And I wonder sorry, that'll go in my predictions, but yeah, go, continue. Okay. I had a thought. But I will hold it.
And yeah, just like Tati, I didn't necessarily mind the Ava and Sarah breakup, or they're on a break, I don't know. But they had opposing sides as a sub, they were on opposing sides as a subplot, right? So both of their fights didn't make much sense and felt more like it was just there to stir up drama between the couple for no good reason. Ava specifically frustrated me because she came off like an uncaring person who was all like, humans first, except, you know, her argument might have made more sense if she herself was a regular human. But she's a clone, so what does she think would happen if Hank found out about that? Because I don't think he knows. Like, does she think he wouldn't start treating her like everyone else? And then secondly, she's been on adventures with the Legends and hired Mona herself, so the fact that she wouldn't even give them the benefit of the doubt rubbed me the wrong way. Also, her argument made her look like really hateful towards magical creatures who were under her care. She defended what Hank was doing because she didn't want to stir the pot and lose her job, but she could have done so discreetly after listening to everything Sarah had to say. Even Nate didn't put it past his father to do something awful, and he trusted Zari even though he just made up with his dad. Ava could have done the same thing instead of saying the things she said and then dramatically declaring she and Sarah were done. And I also am usually into the fake dating trope, but the fact that the show even insinuated that either Nate or Zari would be romantically interested in each other made me gag. Just the idea of them is a big fat nope, and it was really uncomfortable watching and listening to Nate's mom talk about Zari being a his mom talking to Zari about being a grandma and her birthing hips when they only just met. Like, lady, even if she was Nate's girlfriend, ease up because it was over the top. And then a nitpick, but Charlie was barely in the episode, and it was really noticeable considering what a big role she played last time and also like the subject matter of the episode. And I kind of also didn't like the first time we were introduced to Mona's parents. It's largely to make Mona feel isolated and like no one understands her. And I know that parents do that sometimes, but I think it was too much of a simplistic view on immigrant parents and the different ideas of their first generation children. And I just like that they killed Konane after how hard they worked to keep him alive. Like, all in all, I know this episode was never going to live up to the previous one, but it was a bit of a letdown considering how long the show has been on a hiatus.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing for me, that this is the first episode back after they literally, like, broke time. Like, it was massive the way that they ended on their mid-season finale. And so coming back, this episode just seemed really lackluster. Like, in the words of my boo, Dick Grayson, I was just very whelmed. It was just kind of there. And it was in an episode that basically pitted the rights and belief in the innocence of magical creatures versus the Bureau. I thought Charlie was criminally underused in this episode. I really think that the episode could have benefited from someone on the Legend side going rogue and, like, being, like, practically on Mona's side. And I think it should have been Charlie. And I do like that Zari was skeptical and she wasn't like fully on board, because all of the Legends treating Mona like she was crazy kind of bothered me, because they were like really like mean kind of. So I like that Zari was at least like skeptical and, you know, was like, okay, let's trust but verify. But I think there could also have been someone like Charlie who was on Mona's side, because no one in this whole episode was on Mona's side for like half the episode. And I think it would have helped for someone like Charlie, who would be willing to like break the rules and give Mona the benefit of the doubt to help the other Legends see her side. But instead, like, Mona was left to do a lot of the heavy lifting of the episode. And fortunately for me, like, Mona can't really carry an episode. She works better as like a supporting character and not the lead character, which is another reason why I think that Charlie should have been like the lead proactive in the storyline to give Mona someone to kind of like compliment and work off of. That's just me, in my opinion. Like I said before, like I just thought it, like, I know that they talked about translators and stuff once upon a time, sometime during the series, but I just think it's just really funny / unrealistic that in Mexico, like, you have these like gringos coming in from the Legends and the Bureau. Like, the Bureau in suits come in the middle of the fight and they're like, everyone please exit in an orderly fashion, you know, announcing things in English, and everyone's just like, okay, let's do that. So I got, and like Tati was saying, like, it's an episode about, supposed to be about Mexico and the history of like luchador wrestling, but I just felt devoid of any real kind of culture or significance, the same way some other cultural center episodes have felt. And it would not have hurt to have someone from somewhere, whether it's the Legends or someone from the Bureau, speak a few lines in Spanish, or at least attempt to and make a joke out of it. Like, you know, like I would have killed for some like Peggy Hill Spanish, like, a la salidas por favor, like something, and like have someone make like a joke out about how bad they sound. And then like them misinterpreting that joke, like, yeah, I took 7 years of Spanish, you know, like something to show, you know, some kind of like comedy using like the language as comedy, and there just wasn't any. So yeah. And I was, okay, I have a different opinion about Avalanche breakup because I am not as upset about it as Tati and May, and I don't think it was as out of character. I think that for the most of the story, I feel like Ava was in character and part of like, this is the Bureau, this is my job. I can't just go off and do what I want to do because like, I have a thought or have a feeling or what things like that. So I understood like all of that. And I was on board with the whole fight. And I thought it was, did very well showing like the differences between how Sarah's kind of the Legends function versus how Ava has to function within the lines. Sarah and the Legends are outside the lines, and Ava has to like work within the lines and work within the Bureau. And the Bureau just gave them like $4 billion. Hank just gave them $4 billion. So I understand Ava's resistance to just throwing that away because crazy Mona had a thought or a feeling or something like that. So I understand like all of that. And Nate has known his dad for years and known how shady his dad is for years. Whereas Ava's just seeing this person as like a superior. She doesn't really know him. It's her boss. So I understand all of that. What I fell off was her, when they got into that argument, I think when Sarah's like, you know, they are killing people, these creatures, and Ava's just like, so? Like, that's the point where I kind of like, what do you mean, so? What do you mean, like, it doesn't matter if they do experiments on these creatures as long as people are safe? Like, that kind of, and the whole putting humans first and human history first, that's kind of where it turned into, I don't like the side that Ava's on, or I don't understand this position that Ava's taking, and it doesn't really sound like Ava. And I kind of wanted, because she's technically a magical creature herself, and I kind of wanted Sarah to take that low blow and be like, you're not even human. It would have, like, objectively she's not, but it would have been a low blow. But I think that one, Sarah's a better person than I am. But also it's just kind of like, why is she doing this, and why is she's suddenly not valuing magical creatures' lives as much as like human life and things like that. So when she herself is not human, and she herself probably knows more than anybody how it feels to not be the same as everyone else or not have those kind of same experiences. So that's kind of where I kind of took a left-hand turn from Ava and not following her agenda. But leading into predictions, I'll just go ahead and say mine. And what I was, the light bulb that I had when May was starting her dislikes is, I wonder if Ava seems so out of character because she is. Because we didn't have that whole, they broke time and then it just was like business as usual. So we didn't really see what kind of fallout came from breaking time in this new timeline. And I'm wondering if like Ava being human first and all this kind of stuff is a result of the time break and one of the things that they're going to have to figure out like later on down the line. But what do you guys think?
I never usually have predictions with Legends, but that was a good one.
Yeah, I think that Legends will save Mona from the Bureau. That's all. I have nothing else.
And Nora will come back, and she and Ray will get together.
Obviously.
I think that's another just like Nora, like, Courtney Ford is Mexican, right?
Yes, she is Mexican and English, yes.
So that's also, because I remember when the synopsis came out, we thought that they'd be able to use like Nora, and it'd be kind of a cool way to include Nora in the episodes.
But no.
Courtney is Mexican, but nope. No.
We got nothing.
Nothing. None of that.
They ain't got shit.
All their creativity was put in the midseason finale. They lost some steam.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll get it back.
But while they figure out what they're doing over on Legends, we're going to move over to Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol. On Doom Patrol this week, a sentient, genderqueer, teleporting street named Danny, who's being hunted by a secret government agency, the Bureau of Normalcy, needs help from Niles, but gets Vic and Larry instead. Meanwhile, Cliff and Rita track down Karen, one of Jane's personalities, who's a hopeless romantic with the power to compel people to fulfill her wishes. I love this episode. Say it straight off the bat. But I would like to hear what you guys liked about it first, before I go on my likes.
Well, I really love the whole aesthetic of Danny Street, Danny, and what the street represented. It was its very own version of Xavier's School of Gifted Students, and I like that people felt safe there and that they had a whole location away from everyone to truly be themselves. And the name of the secret agency made me laugh at first because of how ridiculous sounding a name for a bureau could be. But I thought flipping it around so that what was considered normal wasn't actually what had normal in the name was clever. Like, it was the Bureau of Normalcy that was wrong, and Danny Street and all of its citizens who were actually the normal ones, and I love that. I especially liked Morally Corrupt's story and how Morris started off as someone who saw Danny Street as bad and something that had to be taken down before turning into one of their fiercest protectors. All of Danny Street was just so inclusive, and the story was executed very thoughtfully. I also thought it was really clever how the writers came up with a way to get Matt Bomer to sing within the scope of the episode. And I enjoyed the hell out of that entire scene. Like, it kind of made me emotional. And then speaking of Matt Bomer, I'm really glad it was Larry and Vic who got to go on a side adventure together. Because one, they both needed it. And two, it helped them to find something worth fighting for in the midst of the hopeless search for Chief. Like, Larry is a defeatist, but he got to find hope and some answers to what happened to him in the past and got to throw in a good punch to the guy who tortured him. And then Vic got to be a hero to some degree and gather everyone together to take on the Bureau, which was a big win for his heroism and something he probably felt down about when finding out he wasn't able to help Chief. And that fight between Larry, Morally Corrupt, and the asshole agent was really satisfying to watch. And then the B-plot, I loved getting to know what was apparently the worst of Jane's 64 personalities, according to Rita. And I also thoroughly enjoyed the fact that this seems to be the only persona that actually likes Rita, and that she tried to stop Karen from marrying Doug without upsetting her too much. Karen actually put Cliff in his place for most of the episode, which was a nice change of pace, because him sitting outside for most of the episode truly felt like the biggest time out for him, something he deserved after what he said to her. And then making Karen's power be putting people under a love spell to control them made a lot of sense in the context of the episode and really explained why Doug constantly went back to her over and over again. It made me feel really bad for him, but I can't say that I wasn't entertained by his family losing it once they found out Karen was back again, and also that she was really into rom-coms and Nora Ephron. And I also liked that Cliff was immune to her powers and at least got to be a bit helpful before Karen lost it. And then the whole thing leading up to the end where Jane seems to be having a mental break or something of the sort and then completely shuts down makes it all the more interesting for what's to come.
Yes, this was a very good episode. It might be my favorite episode of the show so far. Maybe. I'm not sure. But yes, it was very pure and beautiful. I love Danny Street. I love that their mission is, you know, to give a home to outcasts and that they like created their own community there that was like very loving and accepting. That's something that we could all use. And I love Morris's transformation into Morally Corrupt and how the entire town joined forces against the Bureau of Normalcy. And we got to see like several arcs, if you will, of bravery and of acceptance and whatnot, especially from Morally and from Larry, but also from Danny Street themselves. Also liked how the show tied back the little snippets of Larry's past that we didn't previously understand. I remember that we saw a couple of flashbacks during the not Xavier. I keep wanting to call it Xavier, but you know what I was talking about. During the school. During the Niles school episode. Yeah. Where we saw some of his past with the guy that was, you know, trying to do the experiment on him, and I was like, what is going on right now? And then it turned out to be the Bureau of Normalcy. So I liked how they put that together. The musical number was amazing. And I liked that it was like metaphorically a moment of like Larry shedding his skin and embracing himself, even though it didn't really happen, but we get to see, you know, that's what it would look like if you accepted yourself. Also, I just really liked seeing Morally Corrupt and her friends all standing up to that one dude. It was like really satisfying. A really satisfying face off. I can't remember that dude's name, but it doesn't matter. Just because, like, Darren, the whole episode.
Or something.
Yeah. The whole episode, we see just, like, you know, the evil that he is perpetrating and, like, what, and, you know, the abhorrence of what this bureau stands for. And then we get to see both Morally and Larry kind of kick his ass. And that was great. I also really liked how the most awful of Jane's personalities is someone that isn't, like, violent with her powers, doesn't have, like, physical strength, but it's someone who's really adept at emotional manipulation and abuse, because that can be, you know, just as terrifying. And also, I liked how it's kind of felt like the other side of the coin from the doctor lady, Helen, I don't remember what her name was, because it's, like, both have, like, extreme powers of manipulation or, you know, influence, but one of them is, like, using it for good, like, to save the world from the apocalypse, and the other one is, like, using it for selfish, evil purposes, like, putting people under her spell and, like, making people fall in love with her and then dumping them and, like, putting them through an abusive relationship one over again. So, yes, good times. Also really liked how Rita tried to handle Karen and, like, push her in the right direction while still trying not to fall under her spell. Like, she realized that when Karen gets mad, she's like, oh, time to force you to do what I want. So she was, like, trying to avoid that. She still got caught in the end, but she held out for a really long time. Also, I liked how Karen did want people to actually follow her lead without having to use her powers. So even she sort of fell under, like, the theme of acceptance, right? Like, she wants to be loved or whatever, and she doesn't want to force people to do it. But she will force people to do it if she has to. And then, yes, finally, I definitely agree with May. I cannot wait to see what happens with the underground. And I'm glad that they kind of, like, although, of course, I don't like that they broke Jane. I'm glad that we're going to get a window into what is actually going on down there and maybe see more of what makes her tick. Also, I really like that little kid with the robot outfit.
The robot dance?
Yeah, little robot dancing kid. He really made Cliff much more bearable for the amount of time that he was on screen.
I think you made a good point that I hadn't really considered before about the acceptance. And on the one hand side, when you have Danny Street and Larry and Vic, and the whole reason Danny Street exists is to give other people, misfits that don't feel like they have a home, a place where they feel accepted. And the kind of, I don't know, like the dichotomy of Danny Street versus Karen and how her powers work. And it's kind of like the, what do you call it? Like a corrupted version of acceptance, because she wants to be accepted. But when things don't go her way, she tries to force it. So that is kind of like a good contrasting themes within the episode, which is really cool.
I forgot. I wrote this in my review that no one reads, and so I forgot to say this, but I will say this now. The reason why Jane left in the first place was because Cliff said he didn't accept all of her. So it was all about acceptance. Okay.
All of me.
Yeah, exactly. Does not love all of you. Loves what C4 of you.
That does make sense, because Cliff, like, rejected her and said, like, no one accepted her in the Doom Patrol. Karen came out and went to find people, create a, like, manufacture a situation where she was accepted. So yay.
Yes.
Well, not yay, but, like, there's levels to this shit.
Exactly. This is so good. Chill. Okay.
When I read the synopsis, I thought I was finally going to get my Cyborg and Larry take an acid trip and unclench together. Episode. And they didn't take an acid trip, but this was actually, like, a lot better. And then the other thing that I thought when I read the synopsis about a sentient genderqueer street named Danny goes to Niles' house for help, I was like, how do the logistics work in this situation? Like, how does the street find their way to Doom Patrol house? And how does Danny Street talk? And I had so many questions, but I loved how the episode turned out and how they got this storyline for a street as a character to work. Danny Street is the best street. It is the best. They are the best. I'll be curious to see what the reviewer fan reactions are to the episode. But, like, before, like, fanboys get their panties in a twist about, you know, social justice warriors and all this whatever, politicizing comics, Danny, the genderqueer street,
is actually comic canon. And actually, I feel like the TV show series did it better in the comics, in that here Danny is genderqueer, non-binary, and uses like they pronouns instead of it just being described. I think in the comics, Danny Street just has like a
flamboyant gay man.
Yeah, a flamboyant homosexual male personality. So this making Danny Street genderqueer felt more like a modern take on the character, and the right one, considering like it's a street and streets don't have gender. So I feel like making Danny Street genderqueer was a more modern version of what the comics were doing or going for. Also, in general, I just love what Danny Street represents, and that they are a home for misfits and people that feel like they don't fit in anywhere. And I can just kind of, this as an episode, how it could be like really special for a lot of young LGBTQ kids who wish they had their own Danny Street or special place where they felt safe. And just a lot of people, young people in general, that are in situations where they don't feel loved or accepted, that street like Danny Street could appear in their lives, and they could live at Danny Street and just be like accepted and loved. It's just kind of really, really powerful, I think, for an episode on TV. I like the plot twist, the Bureau of Normalcy agent Morris, who goes in with the intent of destroying Danny Street, but Danny is just so nice and welcoming and accepting of Morris that he felt comfortable enough to stay and become who Morris is really like meant to be, which is morally corrupt. And so it's a very nice like little twist that Morris became morally. I also like that it was Larry and Vic that got this mission, and that Cliff was blessedly far, far away chasing after Jane. Larry, especially considering how long he's been torturing himself for being who he is. The musical part of the episode was great. Like, Tati and I had our own like dance party going on.
Yes, it was wonderful.
So good. So happy and so nice to see Larry have that brief moment of happiness before he kind of shut off everything again. And then during the final showdown between Danny Street and the Bureau, I love that it was a drag queen superhero, basically, that beat the shit out of an Asian guy and saved the day. So Morley got to have that moment instead of Larry or Vic. So that was awesome. And it was empowering. And everything was just about it was just so good. And then, like, there was also a B-plot in this episode with Cliff and Rita going after Jane. And her rom-com alter, Karen. And it was kind of really like this perfect horror story. Like this traffic accident that you watch in slow-mo as you realize, like, to your horror, that the situation is much worse than what you initially thought it was. Because, like, Karen, when they said, like, it was one of her worst personalities, you're like, come on, really? Like, Karen is just, she's like a little rom-com, you know, fun kind of personality. Rom-coms aren't scary, but actually Karen is really like evil scary if you think about it, because like this poor Doug, who is getting just emotionally abused every time this altar comes out because she keeps manipulating him and forcing him to love her. And like, so when like his family comes, and it's funny because they are like, hell no. And they're like so totally against it. But if you like actually think about it, like they've been watching poor Doug being emotionally abused at the drop of a hat whenever Karen comes out every time. And I can only imagine that this has gone on for like years. So I like that. I like that for one, Karen made Cliff stay outside the house, so he was also kind of sidelined for a lot of this episode, which is great. But with him like being the guard robot outside the house, the little neighborhood kid, when at first Cliff thought that he was running away from him, but then he comes back in his own little robot gear and they have a little dance off. I thought that was like adorable. And I feel like only kids can make scenes with Cliff seem adorable, because he had Raven from Titans when she went to the Doom Patrol house in that episode. And she also did a robot dance for him. So like kids and robot dances with Robot Man is that's the safe zone where they need to stay. So that was good. And I was glad that, as a robot, the one time that Cliff is useful is because he's immune to Karen's manipulation powers. So he actually had a purpose in this episode. And he was useful for something. And I like the fact that they broke Jane, just because we got our first glimpse into the underground, and it has me really curious and excited to see how this all works within Jane's subconscious. Was there anything to not like about this episode?
Moving on. Just kidding.
I actually still think, like, I think about all this Matt Bomer, Cliff and Jane are supposed to be romance.
We're gonna curse Matt Bomer every episode.
I know.
Damn.
Curse you, Matt Bomer. Like, ever since he clued us into this, I just can't get out of my head, and I still think it's creepy again, week after week, because in this case, Cliff was really appalled that Karen wanted him to walk her down the aisle, and he didn't want that, because I assume he's starting to like her or whatever, but since she did, there's still that father-daughter parallel, but now it just looks like it's leaning toward only Cliff having those feelings. And Jane, in every version of her, clearly sees Cliff as a non-romantic figure and more paternal. And it's also concerning because it's clear Cliff only likes one part of her and does whatever he can to get Jane back without trying to understand what gets her to change into her other personality. So I don't like that. And then I think Jess was going to expand on this some more in her dislikes. But I think Vic was too focused on Chief, even in an episode where he was in a whole town of people who didn't fit in. And I didn't like that both Cliff and Larry gave him a hard time over Jane's painting and potentially killing the team when it's an event that hasn't happened yet, or if it even will happen. Like, he's kind of been crumbling the last couple of episodes, but hasn't really gotten the chance to voice his feelings and issues the same way that Cliff and Larry have, for example. And finally, and this is a nitpick, but I want to know what happened to Admiral Whiskers. Did he just scurry away? Like, was he forcefully removed and killed? An update on his whereabouts would be nice.
Admiral Whiskers will fight another day, I'm pretty sure.
He'll be back for the finale.
Yeah.
Dislikes. There was a moment when Morley was talking about, like, being in your own skin or being comfortable in your own skin. I think it was Morley. One of the, you know, they were at the Peeping Tom, Perpetual Cabaret, and someone looked directly at Vic while talking about not being comfortable in your own skin. And so then I was like, oh, we're going to have a storyline with Vic too, but we didn't. It was like, like the undercurrent is there. Like, yes, right. Vic can relate to this, but it was not, you know, they didn't focus on it as much as I would have liked them to. And as you already very eloquently put it, Jessica, talking about, you know, LGBT kids getting to feel a sense of, you know, acceptance and feeling like there's a safe place for them to go. And like, that was very important for this episode. But I think that just like Jane's storyline had the same acceptance theme, I think they could have given Vic a little bit of it. Like, even in when he was arguing with Larry, you know, when Larry was going to, like, run away, Vic could have been like, I understand, too, because of this reason. But it's fine. Also, I wish that Danny Street had been a little bit more helpful at the end. Like, maybe they could have told us something about Mr. Nobody that we didn't already know. Because instead they were like, Mr. Nobody is bad! Thank you, Danny Street. We know that. But anyway. Speaking of Vic, though, I also feel like he could be a little bit more worried about the hangman's daughter and her painting. Like, that could have also been part of it, right? Like, what is it about me that could go haywire and kill everybody, you know? Right. How human am I? Do I have control of my actions? It feels like the reveal of it last episode, it was last episode, right, was just a reason to drive a wedge between Cliff and Jane, even though it's about Vic. So now I'm like, when is Vic going to deal with this? Kind of random. Also, it's going to be super nasty if Jane sees Cliff as a father figure and he sees her romantically. Like, I really hope that it's not like that, especially right, given Cade's personal trauma. And the reason that Jane even exists is because of father figures not seeing her the way that father figures should. So I would not like that.
Yeah, everything about that is just like a disaster waiting to happen.
So I'm really concerned. I just really want it to be handled not like that, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. Damn you, Matt Bomer.
Right? Why did you do this? Okay, what did you not like, Jessica?
Well, basically, like, while I'm glad that both Vic and Larry had the Danny Street mission, and that mission allowed Larry to let down some of his walls and growth for him. I do wish there was some growth for Vic too, because like I was saying, you know, Danny Street is a special place for anybody that doesn't feel loved and accepted. And obviously, for Larry, I thought it was like the importance of the story coming from an LGBTQ perspective for him to accept himself, because he's been torturing himself for like decades. But Vic is also a misfit in the sense that most of him is machine. And we kind of got the like little sliver of that in the previous episode, where he's just trying to come back into normalcy and, you know, online dating. And he's finding out that people either only want to get to know him for his celebrity, or those people that aren't aware of Cyborg, and just that one girl that he had like a genuine connection with, when she saw what he looked like, she was grossed out by it. And so he also has some issues of being a misfit and not really fitting in. He doesn't really fit in with the Doom Patrol because he's very much like type A and wants to do stuff by the book and wants to be a hero, and they don't. So he's also like, he doesn't really fit in with the Justice League yet because they haven't called him. He doesn't really fit in the Doom Patrol yet because they don't want to follow him. He doesn't fit in normal society because of what he looks like. So Danny Street was a street for where Vic could have had some story progression as well. And so I was a little disappointed that they didn't really delve into that. It didn't have to be as much as Larry's, but I would have liked to have seen at least a little bit of it. And I think overall, like, Vic seems to be the least developed, like, introspectively out of the Doom Patrol, and I would like to see a little bit more of his layers. And then, like, the whole Jane and Cliff of it all, like, this episode, I don't even know if it's because of, if it is Matt Bomer's fault that this was the first episode that I could clearly tell that Cliff is, like, into Jane and more of a, more than platonically. But I felt like this was the first episode. Like, if I did not know anything about what Matt Bomer said, then maybe this would be the first episode. I'd be like, oh, wait a minute.
Right.
Maybe he does like her. I don't like that kind of thing. Yeah. And for all the reasons that Tati said, this does not seem, all of the father-daughter parallels between Cliff and Jane. And then Cliff's feelings for Jane, and then Jane's or Kay's history being the reason why Jane exists in the first place. It's all just like not great. Please don't do that. Predictions.
Never.
Well, I don't like, this isn't so much of a prediction as it is just an observation that Hammerhead seems to be Jane's number two. Like, she's the only other alt other than Jane that we see the most often. And basically, she's just, like, angry Jane. I don't think that she has really superpowers. She's just, like, a different, angrier, more violent personality than Jane. And the others mainly only come out to fight. Like, the word cutter girl that we have not seen in a while since the Nazi episode. And giant fire woman. Or Flit that transports and then disappears. Or their concentrated tasks, like Helen in that one episode, or Karen in this one. But Hammerhead, like, weirdly seems to be, like, the second most normal of the 64. So I'm kind of wondering, like, why that is. Like, it's either Jane or Hammerhead that are the ones that we see most often. And I want to know, is it, like, Split, where Jane and Hammerhead are the ones that hold the light and give it to other people? Or, like, how... Well, and they say that there's no bureaucracy in the underground, so like, how does that whole thing work?
I too wonder how it works.
Does May have any wonders?
I wonder when I'm gonna start the hashtag blame Matt Bomer.
Nothing. I was just gonna say that I do think that we're gonna get an inside look into not just the underground, but like how Kay came to be 64 people. Maybe the beginning of Jane, like Jane's first time out.
Okay.
Coming out.
Lady with Gumption nominations?
Oh, well, does Morally Corrupt count?
Yeah, I think she does.
I think that she, because I feel like she had like a whole arc, you know, finding herself, standing up to her past, and I forgot, God, another thing I forgot to say that I really loved. Why am I like this? Okay, I just want to say Danny Street, not like, because Morally Corrupt was going to go, you know, with the Bureau.
So oh, that they yeah. would
all, so that they would all be safe, and then Danny Street wouldn't let her, because, like, everyone is a unit, right? They're stronger together. I can't believe I didn't say that. It doesn't matter, because no one listens to this part. I know you guys. So anyway, but, like, I really love that it was, like, they really are a team, you know? So the fact that she was willing to sacrifice herself, but also that they wouldn't let her, was nice. Because at first I was worried. They're like, oh, when they find out that you're the reason why they're being chased or whatever, you know?
Like, I didn't think that. Because Danny Street was accepting of Morris. I think probably Danny Street could tell that mm-hmm. Morris was looking for a home and gave Morley mm-hmm. that home. So I don't think that the other residents of the street would hate Morley, but I did kind of wonder if they would let Morally sacrifice herself. Mm-hmm. So I do agree. Like, I really like that Danny Street was like, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. So I really like that. Yes.
I completely back the Morally being a Lady with the Gumption nominee. For all the reasons Pat's already said.
Any legends?
Mona.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have Morally, Mona, and...
Supercore. All right. Anyone wanna eliminate anyone?
I guess we can eliminate both from a Supergirl, to be honest.
Okay.
You're like, both of them can go together.
Together. Isn't that nice of us if we don't split up ships? Just eliminate both of them.
Exactly. Okay, so between Mona and Morally.
Well, can I just say that because the other two had more of an active plot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
<It's okay. laughs> You're an anti.
You don't have to justify it.
Thank you for that.
Okay.
I would say Morally.
Yes. I too would say Morally. Partially because we didn't even give a reason for Mona.
She saved Konane.
Yes, well.
Stood up for what she believed.
She did her best.
She tried. She did her best. But I do think that Morally's story from Morris to Morally was just like a more complete story. And the fact that, you know, she had to run away from a Bureau of Normalcy that would hate her for being who she is. And when it came time to defend Danny Street from that agency, she was willing to go far enough to like sacrifice herself. But also when the street came in, like, she was the one that was her drag superhero queen fight. And it was Morally's moment. So I think that that's a good reason for Morally to win Lady with Gumption of the Week.
Yeah. Plus, Darren or whoever was supposedly Morris's best friend. So,
yeah.
The fact that she went against him and fought for something he hated was really brave of her.
All right. So that ends our this week's episode of Lady with Gumption. Tune in next week. We will go down to two shows. So it'll be Legends and Doom Patrol. Again, we'll discuss likes, dislikes, all that kind of cool stuff. If you have any comments or things that you want to send us, you can always talk to us on Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, on Twitter at @DCTVGumption, or you can send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. We will see you guys next week. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Bye.